Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, recent Springsteen concert attendee.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that defines intensity as the emotions that Nathan, our director Aaron Bratt, and many of you listeners, along with yours truly, endure while waiting for Mary Pat to describe herself anew in her weekly exercises in self-definition. Intensity is on our docket this week as we review two films that involve characters whose emotional limitations cause them to act out in ways that most of us, I hope, would avoid. The first is titled simply The Drama and stars Zendaya and Robert Pattinson as a couple about to be married who suffer a breach of trust that threatens their marital future. The second is Crime 101, a mystery-slash-heist film that involves a jewel thief played by Chris Hemsworth and those who get drawn into his criminal orbit. Let's begin with a study in pre-wedding jitters auspiciously titled The Drama. Anyone who has ever gotten married knows just how nerve-wracking the event can be, what with all the preparations that need to be handled, from choosing the right music to paring down guest lists. The pressure of all this is bound to affect the emotions of the two central characters in Christopher Borgli's film The Drama, which is what happens to Emma and Charlie, played respectively by Zendaya and Robert Pattinson. The fact that they may not know each other, or even themselves, as well as they thought, becomes clear one pre-wedding evening when, while playing a game with their best friends, Rachel and Mike, played respectively by Alana Haim and Mamadou Athi, that involves their revealing the worst thing they've ever done. Written and directed by the Norwegian filmmaker Borgli, The Drama takes us on a riveting emotional journey that is likely to evoke a range of feelings from the occasional guffaw to a self-satisfied sneer. That is, assuming that you can divorce yourself from your own roiling reactions and remind yourself that this is just a movie. This is just a movie.
You know, while I was watching this, I thought, I hope Dan makes it through this movie,
oh,
because we know you have a very
low tolerance
for cringe anything. And there's
a lot
in this movie. And a lot of the talk surrounding The Drama has made it seem like there's a big shocking twist in it, and will even be tiptoeing around the plot as if it does. And I do think it helps if you go in cold. But the most crucial revelation in the movie happens within the first half hour, and then the next hour is about the fallout from that revelation. And this is one of my favorite kinds of narrative structures, when a single, maybe even inconsequential moment totally blows up everything. And I was thinking a lot of Force Majeure, the Ruben Östlund film, as well as a 2011 movie called The Loneliest Planet. Both of those hinge on scenes where a character does something instinctively and it sparks an existential crisis in the central couple. The difference is that in The Drama, the character in question blows everything up, not because of something they do or did, but because of something they once thought about doing. And Borgli's last film was called Dream Scenario.
Yes.
In which a professor played by Nicolas Cage becomes an overnight celebrity because he's been showing up without any explanation in other people's dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And it had such a brilliant setup. And then I thought it devolved into really boring and broad comedy. And The Drama, I think, is a much better movie than Dream Scenario. But I do think it ultimately succumbs to that same problem. I think the first two-thirds of the movie, which is most of it, are almost hypnotic. And they're genuinely complicated. Again, talking around what this movie's actually about. Genuinely thought-provoking, but for me, I thought it built and built and built, and then I thought the third act was really lame. I mean, that's where the cringe comedy, I guess if you could call it comedy, ratchets up, but it didn't totally work for me. It felt like a cop-out, but MP, I'll let you weigh in on the movie before I get into the third act, without spoiling it, of course, but this was mostly, I thought, a really successful, almost like a thought exercise, because it really puts you in this position of how would I react in these situations and what kind of empathy would I extend to a person if they told me this thing? And yeah, I was actually very impressed that it commits to its bit, if you will.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of controversy around this movie, and I'm not totally sure why, but we can talk about some things that the drama has wrought because it has gotten a lot of publicity in the last week, maybe because people don't want to hear about other things that are happening in the world. I like this film mainly because I thought Robert Pattinson definitely played his character to the hilt. And
beyond the hilt.
And just the expressions on his face, and you can feel the angst that he's going through. I mean, this is ultimately about relationships, and it's about trust, and it's about friendship, and what do those things mean? And they have sort of a meet-cute scenario in this coffee shop where the Robert Pattinson character pretends that he has read this book that Zendaya is reading. And that sort of goes sideways once they go out to dinner. So you know that everything is sort of built a little bit on a house of cards. The most incredible thing about this film, to my way of thinking, is these are two like late 20-somethings who have these sort of ordinary jobs, but kind of cool jobs. She's an editor. He works at the Cambridge Art Museum as a curator. But they have the most beautiful apartment, Boston apartment, that you could imagine.
That spiral staircase?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, come on.
I was looking at that.
So I was like, there's got to be more of a backstory here. There's also, I mean, it is clear that he's British and she is biracial. But that aspect of their relationship is never really touched on in terms of the cultural differences or other things that might have happened.
It is a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, but not. I think it should have been explored more.
Not much of one. I mean, you know, maybe visually, but certainly when we go back, because we have to point out that the film is not told in chronological order.
Yeah.
We go back and forth. We see the Zendaya character, Emma, as a 15-year-old. We see her, you know, I assume she's now 28 or around 30 or whatever, but the director, Borgli, plays with us, manipulates us all through.
When you say manipulates us, I guess that's what I'm pushing back on, because I've heard other people say that, you know, this was just a big fraud or, you know, something along those lines. And I don't think it was. I mean, I thought it skewered the wedding industry, which I appreciated in and of itself, because people spend so much time picking out the right napkins and, you know, deciding who should be on the guest list and not thinking about the marriage itself. And that's what this movie is about.
Yeah, I want to just push back a bit, because I'm not saying that the movie's a fraud or that Borgli's a fraud. But what I am saying is that I hated every single character in this movie, and I kept going, get over yourself.
Well, I want to get back to the third act of the drama, because I did allude to the fact that I found it not satisfying. And I think it's because so much of this movie is really digging into discomfort. It's really digging into this existential fear and angst of the two characters, both of them. And then you get to the wedding itself. That's the third act. And it felt like a sitcom to me. I mean, the tension is almost boiling over, and I thought this is the best that they could come up with for the final act of the movie.
I
mean, yeah.
I agree. It should have been better, but I love red wedding scenarios, which is because it totally justifies our decision to have eight people at our wedding.
Yeah.
Because I love it when things go sideways.
Well, and I eloped for that reason.
Correct.
Well, but here's the thing. I don't think it pushes the material far enough, at least past the second act of the movie. Like, if you're going to go there, you got to go there. And I thought, of all the movies to play it safe during, it did feel like the ending was safe. I mean, I was thinking, you mentioned Larry David, I was thinking of The Office. And hey, I like The Office, but it felt grafted onto the ending of this movie.
I've seen a lot of commentary, would an American filmmaker have made this movie? And I would say just three, two words, Gus Van Sant.
I was thinking of Todd Solondz.
Right, exactly.
A lot.
Yeah. But I think that this Norwegian sensibility, I mean, there are things that have been experienced in Norway that, you know, would lead this guy to rethink how that played out sort of I'm tiptoeing around like you told me to.
Well, and I think the style of the movie is, I mean, there's no better way to explain it. He has a very European style. It's
true.
Very cold and dry and distancing.
But one of the funniest things that I read about the drama was in Vogue magazine, it has 65 unanswered unanswered questions from the drama, and some of them were really funny. So if you're not inclined to see the film, although I would suggest that people do, Dan probably know.
To see Alana Haim in one of the great roles of just extreme, oh my God, get over yourself, lady.
Well, and I don't think we've given Zendaya enough credit. I think this is a really, really tough role.
And she wasn't
I thought she was really good, though.
I mean,
I would agree.
I think she kind of disappeared at one point, and I was like, I'd like to bring back Zendaya, because, you know, I've never been a huge fan, but after Challengers, now I'm on board. Well, I'm team Zendaya.
It becomes too much about Robert Pattinson bumbling around at the end, which was my problem. But this movie will make you want to talk about it. So if you're in the mood for that, then hey, here it is.
Well, you know, what I want to do now is see Christopher Borgli's film Sick of Myself.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that either.
Yeah. At any rate, that was our discussion of the drama. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Crime 101. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
As a public radio fan, you often hear that we're supported by listeners like you. We say it all the time because it's the truth. Continual support from our community keeps us going. You can give back by starting a sustaining membership, a recurring monthly donation to SPR. Giving $10 to $20 a month is a great way to support our station. To begin your membership, visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and look for the red donate button. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the feature film, The Drama. Let's now turn to a different kind of tension, one that involves desperate people and bad behavior titled Crime 101. Adapted from a novella by the California-based writer Don Winslow, Crime 101 was written and directed by the English filmmaker Bart Layton. It stars Chris Hemsworth as Mike, a guy who lives a kind of lonely high life that he funds by armed robbery. His technique depends on smarts and surprise and ensuring that no one gets hurt. Mark Ruffalo plays an LAPD detective who is on his trail, if only his superiors would support him rather than favor closing cases regardless of any concern for what's right. When Mike's routine gets disrupted, both by his infatuation with a young woman, played by Monica Barbaro, and by a rogue motorcycle-riding thief, played by Barry Keoghan, he wrangles an insurance broker, played by Halle Berry, into helping him take on one last score, the kind that could earn them both walk-away money. With supporting performances by the likes of Nick Nolte, Tate Donovan, and oh so briefly Jennifer Jason Leigh, Crime 101 is a fast-paced, at times almost Michael Mann-type stylish ride that ends with the satisfying sense of justice that one tends to encounter only in a work of fiction.
Well, only in a work of fiction? I'm not so sure about that, because we do have some examples. Even the earlier directed documentary by Bart Layton, The Imposter, of people who do some amazing things in real life and sometimes get away with them. There are things to like about this film. It was hard for me to imagine Chris Hemsworth as a, quote, bad guy. But, of course, he has to be a bad guy with honor, you know, to some extent.
He's like a Ronin kind of.
Yes. Yeah. So once I sort of got beyond that, I was ready to go with it. But my problem with Crime 101, which I was very much looking forward to watching, is to me, it was much too reminiscent of Heat, the Michael Mann-directed movie from back in the day that starred
everyone in Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
De Niro, really.
De Niro, Pacino
for the first
Val
time.
Kilmer,
right, exactly.
Yes,
that's how it became noted for film aficionados going forward. But it had the same sort of primary protagonist. It also had, you know, the police officer who's trying to do X, Y, and Z. It didn't have the two women, because Nathan had said in sort of an aside when we were talking about Michael Mann that he never really develops his female characters well. So at least there was a better job, I guess, arguably here with that. there are some scenes, some chase scenes that I appreciated. The Barry Keoghan character and Nick Nolte are, you know, sort of the foils to our good guy protagonist, such as he is, and the Mark Ruffalo police officer character. But I don't know, this just fell short for me. So, Dan, I think you sort of encapsulated everything in your overview. I don't have a whole lot to say. So I'm going to turn it over to Nathan.
Well, I want to get back to the title, Crime 101. And how can we not review a movie with that title on a show
Movies
called
101?
Movies 101? It's like they're ripping us off. Well, it's synergy is what it is. But the movie is called that because the 101 freeway in L.A. plays a part in all of these heists. But I also think it's fitting because this movie, Crime 101, is built on a foundation of some of the most basic tropes in crime fiction. You could call them cliches if you wanted to, and I might. There were times when I was watching this where it almost didn't feel like I was watching a movie. It felt like I was studying blueprints because I totally agree. Like, I was thinking about Michael Mann all the way through, and Chris Hemsworth himself starred in Michael Mann's film Black Hat. I was also thinking of William Friedkin's To Live and Die in L.A., which is a much grittier version of that 1980s Miami Vice style.
Or any of the, if you look at Bosch, if you look at The Lincoln Lawyer, if you look at, you know, all of these settings, Perry Mason, that have the LA area as their settings. It was just all those things were going through my mind instead of focusing on the movie.
And yeah, and you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing because
it wasn't a bad thing at all for
me. I love Drive, the Nick Reffin movie, which is basically a collection of references to earlier movies, but that had a style, an aggressive, undeniable style. It was almost like a fashion show review of all those earlier movies. And this one, Crime 101, it's really slick. It has some really good action sequences. The first half hour, I was pretty much in, but I just couldn't help thinking, why am I watching this when all these other movies exist? I didn't really understand. I mean, you've got the lone wolf jewel thief, and he's handsome and distant and Spartan, and he doesn't have any emotional attachments until he meets the right woman. And I swear, I really like Monica Barbaro, who was Oscar-nominated playing Joan Baez. One day she'll get a character that isn't defined by an emotionally distant man, I swear. And then you've got the rumpled, kind of burned-out detective with marriage problems played by Mark Ruffalo. And he has a theory that no one believes, but he's on the right track. And then you've got Barry Keoghan as the loose cannon whose temper throws everything into chaos. And I mean, again,
Halle Berry, come on.
Well, I want to say that Halle Berry is the only original element in this movie to me because she lets herself get pulled into these heists because ultimately she resents the company that she works for. She's this older black woman in this male dominated field. She's been passed over for a partnership, even though she's obviously good at her job. And she's already in a line of work that involves milking rich people for money.
Yeah.
So she could be an asset to the crime world. And I thought her involvement in the plot was the most refreshing thing about Crime 101.
And let's be honest, she's Halle Berry. I mean, 53 or not, she's Halle Berry.
I know. So it was when they were talking about, oh, you're old and, you know, thrown. I was like, I don't think so. I like seeing the guy from a Separation. He plays this jeweler.
Yeah.
So Paman Mahdi, is that how you pronounce his name? So so there were these touches throughout this film that I did appreciate. But just overall, you know, when there are so many like theme movies and so forth, I guess this one didn't do it for me. What's the good news? Oh, it's streaming now for free if you have a paid subscription service, but you don't have to pay extra to see this.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And unlike you two, I mean, I love these big, huge L.A. stories.
Oh, like, you're a SoCal boy.
That's right. Going all the way back to Raymond Chandler, you know, Philip Marlowe stories, all. And Don Winslow is one of those guys who the stories aren't necessarily new or original in any way, but they do capture that sense of, you know, the competing feelings and things going back and forth in the plot that goes in and out. So I enjoyed Crime 101. Is it a great film? No. But for a movie that was 2.5 hours long, it felt shorter. And for a movie that we did in the first half, which was 90 minutes, it felt like 2.5 hours long.
No,
for me.
I'm gonna push
back
on that.
Yeah, we're both gonna push back on that.
I thought it was interesting to see at the end that this wasn't just based on a Don Winslow novel, but a novella.
Yes,
right.
Which explains how
the 2.5 hours.
Well, that explains
because we could have read it four times.
It explains how lean the plot is, but it didn't explain to me why this did become kind of a sprawling ensemble, because it just didn't feel to me like there was enough there. I will agree with you that I think its sense of place is very good. Mm. I mean, it feels like a quintessential L.A. movie in all of those ways.
Well, also because they build in these yoga sequences, you know, so people are going to yoga and then people are listening to these motivational tapes.
Yeah.
These sort of calming, you know, affirmation kind of tapes.
Well, they're
in their
probably
car.
Like apps and podcasts.
Yeah,
at this
I'm
point.
Sure. Like yeah. Calm or something right, such right. as that. Mm-hmm. But should you watch this at home?
Absolutely.
Okay. Maybe.
I'm more on the side of things. Bart Layton, though, the director, we mentioned him briefly at the beginning. I do tend to really like his work. You mentioned his documentary, The Imposter, which is one of the wildest true crime stories. And what he did in that movie is he blended documentary with narrative sequences. And he did a similar thing in his movie American Animals, which was also a heist thriller about these like teenagers or college kids trying to rob the library on their college campus because it's got
right.
that original copy of Darwin's uh-huh. Origin of the Species.
I think
it is.
Remember that, yeah.
And both of those movies, I thought, played around with form and with genre and really kept you on your toes. This is much more of like a bread and butter kind of action movie. The sort of action movie that they made a lot in the 90s and 80s, which is why we're referencing so many of those movies, that you would see on, you know, TNT in the afternoon 20 years ago and maybe stay and watch the whole second half of it. But I could look at it and see, you know, this is a really well put together movie. The cast is stunning.
Yep.
But I guess I don't understand how this is different or original from a hundred other things.
Okay, my advice is,
and
I'll just
name.
Cut to the chase here. Just watch The Imposter, the documentary about this French guy who pretends to be a long lost American boy who's gone missing. And I think that will, like, if you have any cravings for his expertise or whatever, or his, just watch that.
And American Animals is really good.
You can watch both those after you watch Crime 101, but at any rate, that was our discussion of Crime 101. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the drama. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from none other than Benjamin Franklin. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.